About today, Parshas Kedoshim is a very content-dense Parsha. There's a lot going on. And also Yom HaAtzmaut, which is a day of great significance and intensity of itself. And certainly cannot do justice to either by trying to package them both into the same time slot. But just to maybe take note, I'll be Derech HaDrush, very much Derech HaDrush, because it's hard to say that this is the intention of the dinim here, but when we start talking about Shlishi, we're going to talk about Orla, and we'll go into some of the pratim in a moment, but to sketch it out, what you'll see is that Orla is a din which, theoretically, you would think should be tied into Eretz Yisrael specifically. It's a mitzvah hatliya ba'aretz, and that's generally the rule. The mitzvahs hatliyas ba'aretz are specific to Eretz Yisrael, and Orla seems to be an exception. It's a discussion in the Gemara exactly how and why, to what extent. It seems like Lama Maskana, there is a application of Orla in Chutz La'aretz on a level of halacha mishum Sinai, and we'll speak a little bit about whether that makes it a different din completely or a parallel din. And the whole din of Orla is itself very mysterious. It seems to go against the whole notion of Bal Tashchis, the idea that we have 3 years of fruits that are not used, that go to waste, that go to be destroyed. And Moshe Feinstein even comments that this is perhaps just reflective of the Torah in general, that there's a lot that we don't necessarily relate to as intuitive, and we have to be makabel as a mitzvah in order to do what we need to do. And it is certainly a mysterious din, and we'll say more about it in a moment, but just to al pi derech hadrush, so it does perhaps have some relevance here as we observe Yom HaAtzmaut here in Chutz La'aretz, and yesterday Yom HaZikaron, and the whole imagery of a tree. And we know that a tree that produces fruit does so as the result of a lot of input and waiting that we don't necessarily see. And that's the whole nature of fruit, that it comes out of a tree after a lot is put into it that is not necessarily visible. And that we understand. We say, okay, so there's a certain amount of effort and resources and seeds and the like that have to be put in order for it to go into a tree, and already that gives us a mashal for the whole notion of Eretz Yisrael and the Geula, that there's so much that we have to go through that is part of planting the seeds. We talk about smicha, sgula, seinu. We talk about it flowering, and the whole imagery there. This is something which requires a long period of preparation in order for it to be able to come to fruit, but they come to fruition. But also, specifically, Orla, which on the surface really seems so wasteful. There's the idea that that's what has to happen in order to get to the fruit that you can use, to the fourth year of Netzer Revoi, brought to Yerushalayim, that the whole idea that you have to wait so long and everything until then has to be wasted. So that's especially hard to relate to, even once you have the appreciation for the fact that that's what it takes to get to a tree that bears fruit. There's a lot of waiting and preparation. But then beyond that, that the first 3 years the fruit should be wasted, it seems very hard to understand why that's a necessary part of the process. And just reflecting on the whole idea of Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzmaut together, and the emotionally wrenching aspect of Yom HaZikaron and being forced to confront of just how much has to be lost in such tragic ways in order to protect this endeavor of looking towards the Geula, however you perceive that, whether it's the stage towards the Geula, however you understand it, but how much has to be so agonizingly lost along the way. And perhaps that's also a part of the message here, that even though that's so hard to understand why it has to be that way, and it seems like it's so unnecessary, and yet Kadosh Baruch Hu is telling us that this is how it happens. this is how the tree bears fruit, and that we have to be mekabel that and understand that that's all a part of it, is perhaps reflected in this observance that we have of Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzmaut. And then to put it together with the idea of Orlos Chutz La'aretz and this extra form of this mitzvah, which really is appropriately unique to Eretz Yisrael, and yet here we have this version of it applying in Chutz La'aretz, and it's not clear just how much is the same mitzvah or it's a different thing. So here we're observing these days here in Chutz La'aretz, and it's not the same thing, clearly, and it doesn't have, it's not even happening at the same time. And yet it's what we can do in order to try to connect to what Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael goes through and is experiencing. So it's its own version of what's happening there, whether it's an extension of it or something completely different, it remains to be seen. But it is our effort to try to connect and to bring the messages of that to where we are here in Chutz La'aretz. And again, certainly all al pi derech hadrash, but perhaps this first mitzvah that we read about in this third aliyah, Arla, and these details are evocative of some of what we are thinking about today and yesterday and really tomorrow, being that tomorrow is actually Ha'iyar. So all of these ideas are very much on our minds. So just to begin with this concept of Arla, the pasuk says, "V'chisavo al ha'aretz v'tatem kol eitz maichel." V'yaraltem arloso v'spirio shaloshonim v'yelachem areilim lo yechel. So here you will come to the land, right? So it's specifically focused on Eretz Yisrael in the language of the pasuk, and you will plant a tree that is a food tree. So you will give the status of the fruit for these 3 years, the status of Arla. And that's what it's going to be for these first 3 years. The language of Arla is a language that we find in other contexts as well. As we know, Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch understands that it's the kind of language the Torah uses for anything that you're held back from using. So maybe when we talk about a bris milah, it means there's something that's in the way of a person called an Arel because he's not yet fully embraced the Kedushas Yisrael, where what's required of that. But also when we find it more metaphorically used, we talk about an Arel Lev in the Torah, or Moshe Rabbeinu being an Arel Sfasayim, that there's something blocking, there's something in the way that is preventing the full usage. And that's what the language means. So as far as the Tamei HaMitzvos, like we indicated, it's a very difficult Tamei HaMitzvos to try to understand. The Rambam in Maror Nevuchim writes that this correlates to a practice of the Odei Avodah Zarah, that they had some magic that they tried to do to make the trees grow more quickly. That's what they thought they were doing. And then they would take that and sacrifice it to Avodah Zarah. And this is a theme we find in a lot of the Rambam's Tamei HaMitzvos, that they're specifically refutations of idolatrous practices. So if that's the understanding, that that's what was going on in the Ovdei Avodah Zarah culture, so the Torah is telling us we go very far from that, we don't use these fruits at all. The Ramban, in his commentary to Chumash, the Ramban understands that what the Torah wanted was that the first fruits should be brought to Yerushalayim, and the Torah didn't want that should be from the first 3 years, because those are apparently of lower quality. And that's a pretty fascinating idea as well. Bitzal Budinsky, in his Shmuz in the Sefer Mishkan Bitzalo, notes that the Medrash connects this pasuk to the idea of Eitz Chaim Machazikim Ba, and that he sees the message here as that the Torah is an Eitz Chaim for those who are Machazik Ba, those who realize that their whole purpose in life is the connection to the Torah and mitzvos. So therefore, to see that as the purpose, okay, I want to bring the first fruits to Yerushalayim, but the first fruits are not going to be proper for that, so I have to wait. And while I'm waiting, I'm not going to use the fruits for anything else, because until I can make this the purpose, until I can make the Torah and its mitzvos my focus, so then nothing else comes before that. That's, perhaps that's the understanding. In Chazal, overall, there is the message that seems to connect to a Musar Haskel of patience, that you should be able to wait for things. There's a Medrash in the Bamidbar Rabba that notes the Smichas HaParshios to Osochlu Al Adam, which is going to come right after this. And that is meant to tell you that you should cultivate patience, and we see that here in this relationship. But if you can wait for Orla, so also a reference here apparently to, there's an imagery here of the Dam of Nida, the Dam that Shrita is there to get rid of. So you should be able to wait till Nida, you should be able to wait till all the Dam is gone from the animal with Shrita. You should be able to have the Nida of patience, and this is a part of what the message is. Rabbi Simon in his Zimrei Baruch has a whole essay about this, building off this idea that that's the message. So, as we said, the Pasuk does seem to state clearly that this is a mitzvah that shayach to Eretz Yisrael, like it's a general klal of mitzvahs atelius baretz. And here also, it's the language of the Pasuk of Kisavo al Aretz, but the Gemara in Kiddushin and Aflamites, after a little bit of back and forth about it, the Gemara seems to conclude that there is the halach in Chutz La'aretz also, that is halach l'moshe mi-Sinai. So it's a very unusual kind of formulation, because it means that we have a din here, which is half feirish in the Torah, and half halach l'moshe mi-Sinai. And it's especially striking that if that's indeed the intention, if the halacha was meant to apply in the whole world, so why do it this way? Why say in the Pasuk that it's only in Eretz Yisrael, and then have Halacha L'moshe mi-Sinai to tell us that it's also beyond that? That's a particularly unusual formulation. Why didn't the Torah just leave out the part about it being in Eretz Yisrael, and then you wouldn't have to have the Halacha L'moshe mi-Sinai to tell you more? So the Taz in Yeridaya comments on this, and Taz says that he thinks this is, so we'll understand as a din, that Safek Orlas Chutz La'aretz is Mutter. So this comes from this Pasuk, that there is this fundamental difference in status, that when we talk about a safek, so it's only going to have to be machmir by Arlas Eretz Yisrael. The Rashba asks from this on the Rambam's view, because the Rambam's opinion is, in general, the whole klal of safek deraisa l'chumra is itself a din midrabanan, according to the Rambam. So min haTorah, every safek deraisa is actually mutter min haTorah. So then, what is this limud coming to tell us according to him? So that's a good question. Osnayim LaTorah talks about this. Litzkarov talks about this in his commentary to Chumash. And he thinks the Pasuk is just here to tell us that there's a difference between the two. That there's a din of Orlos Eretz Yisrael, and there's a din of Orlos Chutz La'aretz. And that's the main message of it. So what are the differences, and how does that play out, and what does that reflect? So that's itself a discussion. The Gemara talks about some differences, and the Rambam adds that one difference has to do with halacha you find in the Mishnah at the beginning of Arla, in the second Mishnah in Arla, regarding if somebody is planting for the use of the public. So, according to one opinion, that if somebody is planting for the public, so there's still a prohibition of Arla, the Mishnah says that Rabbi Yehuda agrees, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees, that it's pater from Arla when it's made for the public. So the Rambam in Hilchos Ma'aser Sheni, the Rambam applies this pasuk, this first pasuk that we just read. So he uses this to tell us that there is a din of Orla even for one who is planting for the public. But he says that's only true, like the pasuk's talking about in Eretz Yisrael. But in Chutz La'aretz, so there, public planting would be pater from Orla. That's how the Rambam understands. The Torah points out that the Rush disagrees. So the Rambam's opinion that there is this din only for the public, so the Bach suggests it's based on a drasha from the Gemara in Pesachim, Adaf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph, that the language of the Pasuk is that the Pasuk has the word Lachem, Shalosh Shanim Ya Lachem, Arelim Lo Ye'achel. So the Gemara understands that to teach us that this includes also if you're planting from the public. So since the Pasuk begins by telling us Kisavo al Haaretz, so maybe the Rambam understands that that's specifically about Arlas Eretz Yisrael. But in Chutz La'aretz, then we don't necessarily have such a din that's going to it's going to apply to planting on behalf of the public. But it's speculative because the Rambam doesn't actually quote this pasuk or make this drasha, so it's hard to know exactly how he gets this from. So Reb Chaim Brisker, in the Chidushim on the Rambam, in Hilchos Macholos Tesuris, actually, so he has a big discussion there about this concept of Orlus Chutz La'aretz, which, as we see, is a halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. So how exactly do you understand the concept of halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, the idea that there are these dinim that are transmitted to us through this Mesorah, if not spelled out in Chumash? So he says, halacha l'moshe m'Sinai can operate in one of two different ways. So either you have something that is an existing din that is explained, like, for example, the idea of what an esrog looks like, we said halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, or what the fact that tefillin have to be square. These are existing dinim, tefillin and esrog, and what exactly are their rules. So that it can be halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, or it can completely teach a new concept. She calls halacha ha-mechadeshes or halacha mefareshes. The first one would be mefareshes. It comes to explain how rules play out, or it could come to teach a whole different din. So when we say that there's a halacha of Orla and Chutz La'aretz, and that's halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, so you could see that as mefareshes, that comes to explain that even though mitzvah atzilus ba'aretz should really be only in Eretz Yisrael, but here it comes to extend it, or no, it's really a whole different din, that we have a din of Orlus Eretz Yisrael, and Orlus Chutz La'aretz, halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, it's a whole different concept. And Reb Chaim notes that according to the Rambam, if you violate the Isser of Arlos Chutz La'aretz, so then you're Chayav Makas Mardis, which is normally what you give for a din that's not Min HaTorah. So he thinks that that shows you that it's really a whole separate din. It's not just an extension of the existing din Min HaTorah that we're being told that applies in Chutz La'aretz also, but it's really a whole different concept subject to Makas Mardis. So there's a sefer called V'Darashtu V'Chakarta Al HaTorah. It's an interesting Lumpus on Chumash by Aaron David Grossman. And he thinks that this could explain also the Rambam's opinion regarding planting on behalf of the public. That if Orlus Chutz La'aretz all comes from the same Pasuk, so then it should also have the same din. That if the din of planting for the public it comes from the Pasuk, so then it should only apply to Orlus Eretz Yisrael, because that's the only part that comes from the Pasuk itself. But when it comes to the halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, you wouldn't necessarily have that din. But the Rush, who doesn't agree that this din doesn't apply to Arlos Chutz La'aretz, so maybe he thinks that this is a halacha mefareshes, that the halacha l'moshe m'Sinai of Arlos Chutz La'aretz actually comes to expand the existing din of Arla in Eretz Yisrael. It's a different mahalach in the Tzlach, Reb Meir Simcha, and the Or Tzamech, and Hilchos Shchenim also has this mahalach, but the Tzlach, the Nota B'Hud, and his commentary Brachos, and the Or Tzamech, both of them, so they have a different mahalach that's based on the Gemara Mesachas Brachos, and Daf Lamed Vav Min Aleph, that there the Gemara says regarding Orla, it says, Kol Hamekel Ba'aretz, Halacha Kamosu B'Chutz La'aretz. So if you have a machlokes, and there's an opinion that is Mekel, so in Chutz La'aretz will follow that opinion. So then maybe that's why there is this question about planting on behalf of the public, since that was a machlokus in the Mishnah. So then in Chutz La'aretz it could be mekel based on this. So that whole issue of kol ha-mekel is an interesting notion. This idea that when there's a machlokus, you're allowed to take the lenient opinion and apply it l'chachila in Chutz La'aretz. So that's an interesting discussion as to what to do with that. So first of all, the whole concept of a suffix and the fact that there's something unsettled here and something that's not perfectly established. So this could be reflective of the idea that certain areas of halacha, and Reshechta talks about this in Bikvei Hatzon, and Rav Gustman has a shir about this in the Shirim on Kedushin, that there are a handful of dinim in the Torah that's separate from the general klalim of suffix. There are certain dinim where we have specifically mudim that they only apply in a vaday status. And that if you have a suffix, so then the whole din doesn't apply. So it could be that Orlus Chutz La'aretz has this kind of status that basically it only applies to a vaday, and if it's not a vaday, so then you don't have the din at all. This is related to a concept you have in the halachas of mamzerus, and also in the halachas of avelus, that there are dinim like that sometimes, that if you don't have definite knowledge the din applies, so then the din just doesn't apply because it's connected to definite status, and if we're not sure that it applies, so then the whole din doesn't come in. So could be that's what's going on here also, and you have to figure out exactly what counts as a suffix. Sometimes the machlokas make something into a suffix, sometimes the matter is considered settled, sometimes the opinions are not necessarily considered to be equal. So that's a whole discussion, a lot of big klalim in the Torah really kind of surround this din of Orla. It's just worth noting just how much there is to see that comes out from these dinim. The Tzlach also comments over there in Brachas and Daf Lamed Vav that if one takes the opinion in the Gemara that Kedusha Shnia Lokei Shalos Delavo, that the second Kedusha of Ezra was not meant to be a permanent Kedusha, so then it could be that nowadays, even in Eretz Yisrael, we don't have the Kedusha of Eretz fully, which is a part of what's relevant to questions of Shemitah as well, and we brought that up when talking about the Hetzer Mechira, the question of whether there is Kedushas Haaretz fully nowadays. So if there isn't, so then that would seem to mean that even Orlos and Eretz Yisrael should have the same din of Orlos Chutz La'aretz. Shmuel Rozovsky didn't agree with this. There's a whole essay about this in the Sefer Zichron Shmuel, quoting from him, but he has that's a collection of essays of his. So he has a hasag on this, but that was the view of Tzlach. Okay, so a lot to say about Orla. So let's skip to the next din in the Aliyah, to Pasuk Chavav. In between, there's a din of Netar Avoy here, that Pasuk Chavdal, Talashan HaRavias, Yaakol Periol Kodesh, Shilu Masham, Shana Chamishis, Tochlu Espiriol, Ha'osif Lachem Tvoso, Ani Hashem Lokechem. Fine, so now the next din, Chavav, Lo Sochlu Al Hadam, Lo Sinachishu, Lo Sonei, Lo Soneinu. So here, lo sochlu al adam is an interesting din. So it's a din, really, it's a lav shel klalos, because Chazal understand from here many different applications of what's going on. What is the significance of lo sochlu al adam? What does that mean for us? So as Rashi tells us in the pasuk, laharbe fonim nidrus b'sanhedrin, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, and the Afsamach Gimel Mar Aleph tells us a lot of different dinim that comes from it. So what are the din of the Rashi quotes? As harish lo yochal yibsar kadshim of nezrik as damim, that you can't eat the meat of the animal before zrika. As har lo yochal mehim as chulim tam shetetze nafsha, and if you shecht an animal, so you can't eat before it's totally dead and before all the blood has run out. Vod harbe. So another dinim also. What other dinim are also included? So also that there's no havra for, no sudas havra for haruge bezdin. Somebody is executed by bezdin, we don't have a sudas havra for him. And also, perhaps this is one of the more well-known dinim, that the members of the Sanhedrin, on the day that somebody is executed, so they're not supposed to eat, they're supposed to fast. And it reflects perhaps the chomer haldavar and the responsibility that they should feel. I think there were gedolim who wouldn't eat on the day that they were involved in a Siddur Haget, reflected the same kind of mentality. And also, the Gemara includes it as azhara for Ben Sarah Mora. This is a way of conveying the isser that's involved. It's not clear when Torah talks about Parshas Kisetze, about the din of Ben Sarah Mora, it tells us what the community should do with him. It's not clear what the isser is on him. So it could be that this is a source for the isser to be a Ben Sarah Mora. And the Gemara, Maseches Brachos, understands from here also another din, which presumably you have to say is an asmachta, because if we assume that our tfilos, our daily tfilos schedule, that's a din midrabanan, so then you'd have to assume that that's the application of this din is also on the level of an asmachta. But the idea that we shouldn't eat before davening, so maybe that's the most well-known reflection of this pasuk, even if it's not the primary limud, that lo sochlu, kodem shiyispalu al dimchem. You shouldn't eat before you daven for your blood, for your life. And Shulchan Aruch says this doesn't include drinking. It's a whole discussion why. It's her quotes from Yabi Ezri. And it was the machlokas, Rashi and Brachas, Rashi and Tosfos in the first parak of Brachas, of Dav Hei Mebeis, that maybe even other activities we know, the other we shouldn't do other tzrachim before davening as well. So Rashi seems to understand even learning before davening is problematic. Tosfos disagrees, and Tosfos says it seems like from the Gemara in the second parak of Brachos that Rav would give shir before davening, because the Gemara talks about how Rav, he would interrupt his shir to say Kriya Shema when the time came. So Rabbeinu Yonah there writes that maybe there's a chiluk between public learning, and that was apparently okay, and private learning. In general, we don't assume to be machmer for this, but it's a very interesting idea. So the pasuk also includes this reference to Nechush and Ma'onein, which really the primary iterations of the prohibitions associated with magic are found in Parashas Shoftim. But here we have it stated as well that we shouldn't be involved in Nechush, and Nechush is when a person has kind of a superstitious attitude and he tries to figure out how he should make decisions based on signs that are completely irrelevant, things that happen that don't have any actual significance. And lo sonenu, so here Rashi says, Lashon onos v'shol, shemir yom ploni yafel haskom alacha, shapur special. You assume that certain times have extra special significance. So it's an interesting question how exactly this plays out la halacha. And because we do find la halacha that there are some things that we do that seem to border on both of these concepts, there's a big discussion in poskim. It all really goes to the attitude of just how much weight you are putting on these types of external simanim, and how much you're making your decision completely tied into it. So, for example, Shulchan Aruch discusses that there was a practice that one should not get married in the second half of the month, called B'choser Halavana, when the moon is getting smaller, because it's a not inspiring sign. It looks like things are going down. So in the Shulchan Aruch, it quotes that as, not that you have to do that, but quotes that as mutter. You have to worry that maybe this runs afoul of this concept of Nechush and Ma'onein. And the later poskim explained that it all depends on how you view it, that if you see this as an inspiration, you see a moon that's getting bigger, as something that you can look to as inspiration, so then that's one thing. But if you see it as if your fate is really tied in with these external things, and you're only going to have a successful marriage no matter what you do, it's only going to be successful if you get married at this auspicious time, so then that's very problematic, and that's a violation of this concept. And you see, even within the structure of halacha, Rav Shamshon Ufal Hirsch has a comment here. He says that one should not attribute qualities to halacha that are mystical. It's not the way it works. Like the Rambam was very careful about how one relates to a mezuzah. You should see a mezuzah as a good luck charm. It's a din, it's a mitzvah. It's not something that we use to try to bring us superstitious qualities. And sometimes it's a subtle distinction, but it's very significant. So just to move quickly through some of these very significant and very applicable dvanas and dinim. So next pasuk is the din of not cutting off your payas, lo sakifu pas rasheichem, lo sashtis says pas kanecha, and you can't shave off your beard. So we know that for most of the Rishonim, they see these two dinim as playing out differently. So the halacha of payas, according to most Rishonim, it's all based on the result. That it doesn't matter how you cut it off, you shouldn't cut off your payas at all, any kind of implement. But the last part of the pasuk, the part about shaving your face, so there we assume that it does make a big difference, that that's talking about shaving with a razor, and that without a razor, that's a different story. What exactly counts as a razor or not, so that gets very complex, and what exactly is a kosher shaver or non-kosher shaver, so that's outside of our scope right now, but it goes to the question of the fact that the tool makes a difference. So we generally assume, like most Rishonim, that the tool makes a difference as far as the beard is concerned. But as far as the payas, it doesn't matter what kind of tool. You're not supposed to cut off your payas with anything. But the Rambam is the outlier here. The Rambam, Hilchos Avodah Zarah, and Parak Yud-Beis, Halacha Vav. So he sees them as the same din. It's all about cutting with a razor. So you can't shave off your beard with a razor, and you can't cut off your payas with a razor. So if you have a different way of cutting off your payas, that would be mutter, according to the Rambam, against the opinion of all these other Rishonim. So it could be l'shitaso, from the picture. Who knows if this picture has any meaning, but those notebooks that they used to give us in elementary school, I don't know if they still in your day, but there's this picture that was supposed to be a drawing of the Rambam. Who knows where it comes from originally and how accurate it is. But there's pictures that represent themselves as the Rambam, and it looks like he doesn't have payas at all in the picture. He has a beard, but the space in front of his ear is clear. So who knows if there's any validity to the picture whatsoever, but there are those who claim that is the Rambam l'shitaso, because according to the Rambam, you can cut off your payas without the razor, and that's not the view of the other Rishonim, that's not how we generally assume. Rav Shmuel Hirsch suggests, though, that according to the mainstream view, that the payas, it's all based on the result, on whether it's cut off or not, and the beard, it's about how you do it, that explains the change in the language, that it's lo sakifu and lo sashchis. So when it comes to the beard, it's a singular language, because it's about you, what do you do? But when it comes to the payas, it's about how it's perceived. It's about what people end up seeing. So therefore, speaking to the public, saying that where all of you should be aware that the payas should not be cut off. So there's a lot to talk about, whether the Isser changes significantly with one kind of tool or another, and whether it makes a difference in Hilchos Shabbos. So there's a lot discussed in the postgame about people who had to make decisions. So for example, people are being conscripted into the army in Russia. Back there were other kind of stars for the Russian army, and they would insist that they shave off their beards, and sometimes they would do it on Shabbos to conscript them whatever days they would. And let's say it happened on Shabbos, so then they say either you shave off your beard or we will. So when it comes to Shabbos, so there's the issue is going to be what you're going to do primarily on a deraisa level, and when it comes to the issur of being cut with a razor, so we see that that's going to apply even if somebody else does it to you. So if you, let's say you have a choice, they're going to cut you with a razor, they're going to shave, cut off the beard with a razor, or you could use a cream or something like that to take the beard off yourself on Shabbos. So what's the better option? So this was a big discussion in Poskim. And one of the volumes of the multi-volume Sefer on the Melachos of Shabbos, there's a whole kutras on this in the back. It's a very complex question, and there are a lot of different studs into it, and it depends on how exactly you understand the Isser of shaving on Shabbos, which could theoretically be on Melach Shnitzricha Legufa, depending on how you relate to it. It's a very complex question, but it gets to the interaction of the different levels of the Isser of shaving and the Isser in general, and the Isser of shaving with a razor, and the Isser of shaving on Shabbos, and how exactly to rank different forms against each other. So it's a big question. We're going to have to dive in a second, so just if you want one at a time. But so the next pasuk, with a lot to say about, so we'll just have to say very quickly. There's a lot more left. Okay, so let's just say very quickly for another time. So the next pasuk tells us about the prohibition of tattoos. Ksovas kaka l'sitnu v'chem. So here is a lot to talk about what exactly is the issur d'oraisa, what's the issur d'rabbanan. So ksovas kaka is a machlok shishona, actually what refers to what. The issur involves writing and also cutting into the skin and then also filling it in with ink so that it stays there. Which one is which? Actually, my focus was shown, but it doesn't really matter because the order doesn't really make a difference. And the Gemara Makkah says there's nisa d'rabbanan to put dirt or something on your hands, so on your arm, on your wound, so that it looks like that. So this issue that there's nisa d'rabbanan involved actually has a lot of implications for a lot of modern day issues. And it's a big discussion. It's also a question post can talk about, is this specifically because there was a Avodah Zara relationship? And is it only Asur Min HaTorah when it's for that purpose, or when it's for the purpose of the writing, or the writing specifically for the purpose of Avodah Zarah? That's a big discussion, because there's also a lot that the Gemara talks about writing a get on an Eved's arm, and that's a whole discussion with that involve in Isser anyway. So there's a lot to analyze about this. And there's a little kuntras about this, Reb Chaim Kanievsky, in one of the Sfarim, in the Siach HaTzadeh, so he has a smaller sefer called Pashavim HaKsav, about issues of tattoos, and gets into a lot of the questions here, and the question it's really only about letters, like we find in the Shabbos, about other things, does it make a difference how long it lasts? Does it have to last forever, or it last a long time? This is my chalukas rishon in the Gemara Makkos. The Muki Yosef's opinion was, even if it lasts for a long time, but not forever, so that's part of the Isser, and the question of a certain kind of makeup, that's a tattoo, so that he talks about also. Chaim thought you had to be a machmir for marasayin considerations, and this comes up a lot of shilas nowadays that are contingent on some of these issues, so it's a big topic in itself as well. And then the pasuk continues, Shav Sait Tishmaru, Tashay Kiro, and Hashem, that we have to keep Shabbos and also have reverence for the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara tells us we can't build the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos from this relationship. Moshe Feinstein, in his commentary on Chumash here, has a whole Moshe Shmuz against people who do come to Shul but don't care about Shabbos, which is definitely a lot of people, so he suggests his Pasuk is coming to say something about that, but you know, it's a complex issue in itself, sociologically. The Aznayim Latorah, Lutzkarav, suggests that Shabbos and the Mikdash are meant to convey the two types of sanctity, the sanctity of time, the sanctity of place, and therefore Torah mentions them together. And the Mesha Chachma suggests that they also, the reference to Yiras specifically, is because these are times when maybe ironically we need a bigger Azhara about Yira, because they're times when we're not involved in our day-to-day life, our day-to-day work, so we're more likely to get into trouble, so we need an extra reminder of Yira. Okay, so just very quickly get to the end. So al tiftnu al ovos ve al hayidonim al tavakshu l'tamo v'hem ani ashev l'keichem. Meshe Chachma has a comment here that davka l'tamo v'hem, that if one wants to, so to speak, seek out Tuma through his interest in these things, that's specifically the nature of the Isser, but if he's doing it in order to teach, or in order to paskin, like the Gemara talks about l'havin l'horus, it would be mutter. And the Aznayim Latorah comments that when it comes to other Averas, Tumah comes from the Aveira. Here, the whole Aveira is about seeking out the Tumah. And then the Aliyah ends on this very significant pasuk, they say the takum, badarta p'nei zokim v'reisim l'kech ani Hashem. So we should stand up for Aseva. Aseva is an older person. The Gemara says in Kiddushin that even if he's an Amaretz, we should also stand up for him. The Kutzker Rebbe had a fascinating insight here, which is a little synergy for us. He says that the reason that we talk about specifically standing up for a seva is because if a person gets older, even if other taivas tend to decrease as a person ages and becomes weaker, so there's one taiva that increases when a person gets older is the taiva for kavod. They have a greater need for kavod. So these things may be, therefore, the idea of standing up for him is a din of what? De machsoro. Yeah, very good. So a person has more tzar when he doesn't get covered when they're older. So therefore, the Torah says, de machzoro, you have to show more covered to people who are older. The Zohar interprets this more homiletically. Bifnei seva takum, that before you get old, you should get up and do tshuva before you're old. And vadar to pnei zaken, so the Gemara there in Kedushan Alibayz understands that zaken is eshekana chachma, it's a reference to a Talmud Chacham. The Ran quotes from the Rambam that any Baal Maisim also is included, and Chacham will stand up for a Baal Maisim also. And the Ohel Moshe has a comment over here that the idea of Zekana Chachma, which the Gemara has that Rasha, so okay, Zekana, how do you know Chachma? So where is that alluded to in the word? So Zakin is Zekana, but how do you know Chachma specifically? So he understands that must be self-evident, because Chachma is the only thing that's really called a Kenyan. That's the only thing that really is called a acquisition. That goes to the essence of who you are, and that's something no one else can steal from you, and this is something that comes along with you forever, and that's the whole purpose of life. So therefore, that's the only thing that's really a Kenyan. And understanding that and appreciating that is what gives you Yira Shamayim, and that's what allows you to really relate to Yira Shamayim in real life, and connecting to the experience that you have with Talmid Chachamim, and understanding, appreciating what Chachma really is. So through that, we seek to develop that appreciation for what it means. And just to close on this note, that we talked about recognizing all the kinds of Chachma and Kedusha, and as Yom HaZikaron Yom HaAtzmaut, we call the comment of the Shlomo Zalman, that when somebody asked him, he wants to visit the Kibrei Tzadikim, he wanted to go to Meron, and Shlomo Zalman said, you can go much closer, you can see all the Kvarim and all the fallen soldiers who gave their lives for Am Yisrael. So the notion of being able again to recognize where true sacrifice comes from, and how that is able to inspire and move us forward. So we should always be worthy of everything that was done for us, and we should understand what is really meaningful in life, and we should be able to move forward from that. So we should be meaningful in the Matzmot, and the Shabbos, and look forward to seeing you on Sunday.